If you were to ask me what heaven is like, I would have to say to you that the Bible in many ways answers that question, because the Bible tells us in many ways what heaven is like. But I do have to emphasize the word like, because the Bible will only show us a likeness of heaven. And the likeness is far short of the reality. I could show you a photograph of Jerusalem. I have done so to many of you in this house, but we have looked at some photographs of Jerusalem. I could show you a photograph of Jerusalem, but it would only be a likeness. And seeing a photograph is not anything like being in Jerusalem. It's not anything like hearing the sounds and seeing the sights and smelling the smells and getting the three-dimensional reality of it all. It's not anything like being there. Heaven is a bit like that to us. Only the difference is even greater. Even greater. The Bible pictures of heaven are but a black and white shadowy image in contrast to the greatness and the glory of that place. So I emphasize the word like. I hath not seen it, nor ear heard it. Heaven is the highest creation in the universe. It is higher than the universe, not only geographically, but it transcends the earth and anything that we have seen in every way. If we could imagine a man transported back or forward in time, say someone living in the days of Isaiah the prophet, 2,600 years ago, if a man could be transported in time and be brought to our time now, he would be overwhelmed with the sights and the sounds. He would hardly know how to cope with it, really. And if he went back, he couldn't even begin to describe what he saw. It would be exceedingly difficult. And he could only use the pictures and metaphors and images of his own day. And yet 2,600 years of earthly change will still not transcend the difference between heaven and earth. But the Bible does give us some pictures in the imagery of our world. Images which actually are quite numerous, each of which gives us some differing insight of the kind of place heaven must be like. And so it is pictured as a country, it is pictured as a house, it is pictured as rest, as a garden or a paradise, it is pictured as light, it is pictured as a kingdom, as a banqueting place. But what I want to do is to consider with you tonight heaven pictured as a city. And in Hebrews we have that image several occasions. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 10, I draw your attention to it now, verse 10 of Hebrews chapter 11, we read, he looked at his Abraham, he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Now I remind you that the epistle to the Hebrews is written not only for Jews, it is written also for Gentile Christians. Christians who are pilgrims. And you can't really understand Hebrews unless you keep this in mind, that the Hebrew to whom it is addressed is not a Jewish believer, but a pilgrim Christian, like Abraham, a Hebrew, one traveling. Christians are sojourners. Christians are followers of Abraham. Christians are in the Exodus out of sin. Christians are in the exodus out of this world, and so we as pilgrims are not looking for permanence here. This is not our home here. We are sojourning heavenward like Abraham, looking for a city. You have words like sojourn in verse 10, verse 9, verse 10. You have the word sojourn there. You have the word stranger in the world. Stranger in a strange country. You have the idea of an alien, a foreigner. You have tabernacles, tents. That's temporary dwellings, not permanent dwellings. He's in a tent. He's a stranger. He's a sojourner. He's traveling about. He has his family with him, that's true, but he has no permanence. He realizes this. He's a pilgrim living by faith. He has faith. He has promise. He has sight. But he has not the full enjoyment of the reality of heaven. And Christians are like Abraham, walking by faith, realizing that here is only temporary, here is not permanent, realizing this, seeing this by faith, seeing heaven far off by faith, looking for that place, that city. And it's faith that makes that real. That's why this chapter begins with faith is the substance of things hoped for. This heaven is hoped for. And faith makes that substantial to us in our hearts and lives. It's a reality. In fact, heaven is more real to us than anything in the earth. And it's faith that makes it real. Faith is the evidence of things that haven't been seen. Faith makes it real to us in our experience. It's a reality. And it was a reality to Abraham. And he was waiting for the city. And he was looking for the city. He was expecting it. And this city, of course, is no ordinary city. It wasn't an earthly city. Because for a start, it has foundations. He looked for a city which has foundations. Not ordinary foundations like earthly cities, because earthly cities have been leveled. Earthly cities are not permanent. Earthly cities have been ransacked and knocked down and swept away and another one built. And the foundation has been the city before that has been destroyed. But this city has foundations. It's unlike any earthly city. This one is unshakable in its foundations. Every earthly city is shaken. Even its foundations are shaken. But Abraham's looking for a city that hath foundations and cannot be shaken. And Paul goes on to talk about that. We've received a kingdom that can't be shaken. And so it has foundations. And the city has a special builder, and these aren't ordinary foundations, because the builder is special, whose builder and maker is God. The two words are important. The repetition is not redundant. He is builder and maker. The city has only one architect. The city has only one hand that has ever been put to it. The city has only one designer, one author, and one completer and disposer of the whole work of the thing. There is nothing said about laborers. There is nothing said about helping hands. This is not built like an ordinary city. This is not compacted with bricks and mortar and slowly erected with intermediary hands building it up bit by bit. No! This had just one architect, this had just one designer, and the city was spoken to being. As God said, let there be light, so he said, let there be heaven. That's what this means. Himself, without building, without the works of hands, as an architect who just said, let it be. And it was. God is the architect, the design is his. He spoke it into being. There was no labor. He made it by a creative word. And so it is a city built by God alone. And then in verse 16 of Hebrews chapter 11, we are told that the pilgrim, they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. God has built it for a purpose. Here we are told clearly that the city is heavenly, it's not earthly, a heavenly country. A heavenly country, a better country, and this city is in that heavenly country and is the capital of that better country. This city is a prepared city. We're told it's a city made ready. and it's made ready for men. It's made ready for sinners. He hath prepared for them a city. Yes, for them a people. A people that he's not ashamed of. He's not ashamed to be called their God. For he has prepared for them a city. And they are going to be around him. And he is going to be their God in the midst of them. Not ashamed of his people. A special people. This wonderful city is a fitted and prepared place for them. For them who have God as their God. For them who are pilgrims, like the pilgrims in this chapter. For them who have the faith of the men and women in this chapter. For them. Not for everybody. But for the people of faith. For believers. For them. A people he is not ashamed of. It is for habitation, the city. And then in chapter 12, verse 22, we go into a new chapter here. And in verse 22, here are the Christian pilgrims again. We are now in the New Testament age in chapter 12. Chapter 11 is the Old Testament. Fathers, the patriarchs of faith, but now there's we. There is us who are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses of these old patriarchs. And now we are in our journey. We are part of the great party that's making its way to glory. We are looking on to Jesus, and they're waiting, watching. Not being fully glorified until we finish our course as well and we're all brought in. The cloud of witnesses are waiting and we are on our journey as Christian pilgrims. We are the real Exodus. We are people who have come to not Sinai, but have come to heaven itself. Verse 22, ye are come unto Mount Sinai, Mount Zion. We are in the Exodus. The real Exodus, the real people of God, and we have come to Mount Zion. You'll notice it's present. It's not future. We've come to it now. We've come unto the city of the living God. We've come unto the heavenly Jerusalem. We've come to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly. We've come to it now. We're not yet in the full enjoyment of it, that is true. But we're on the road to it. Heaven has come down into our souls and into our life. We're citizens of this kingdom. We have come to it. The Lord has brought us to it by faith. We're on the road to it. We're on the way to it. We have come to Mount Zion. We're not yet glorified. We're not yet in the gates. But we've come to the mount. We're not yet in the city. But we've come to the walls. We've come to it. And we're on our way into it. And here it's called the city of the living God. It's called the heavenly Jerusalem. It's made by God, you see. It's his city. He is in the midst of it. He is the king of it. The king of glory. His city. He made it. Not man. He pitched it. This tabernacle. Not man. He is the king and center of it. We have come to it. And then in chapter 13, verse 14, as followers of Jesus who have gone outside the camp, bearing his reproach, here, verse 14, have we no continuing city. Here again we are reminded that the city that we seek is permanent. It is not transient. It is not temporary. Here we have no continuing city. We have no permanent city. We have no city that goes on forever and ever. We don't have such a city here. Every city here is transient. Every city here is temporary. We know that. We're not seeking a city here. There's no continuing city here. But the city that we seek, which is to come, is continuing, is permanent, has foundations. The city of God, of which glorious things are spoken. There is one thing sure, that this city that Abraham looked for, this city that we have come to by faith and are on the road to, and this city that we are looking for as well, seeking the one to come, this is sure, it's not here. It's not here. And so this imagery of a city to come is what is set forth to us as the children of faith. And so we have to ask ourselves, what image would such a city strike up for Abraham? What kind of expectation did he have whenever he was looking for a city? What would go on in Abraham's thoughts? What would the Spirit of the Lord reveal to his mind as he meditated and contemplated this place that he was seeking as a city? What would he discover from the imagery of it? Remember, he is a tent dweller. But remember also, he came from a city, one of the greatest cities of the East, Ur of the Chaldees. He, in actual fact, was a city dweller at one time. He left it to follow the Lord. So he has imagery going on in his mind about a city. He's familiar with cities, Ur of the Chaldees, and he passed through cities on his long journey into Palestine. And there were cities in Palestine, and he went down to Egypt on occasion, and there were cities in Egypt. But he wasn't looking for any of them. His heart was not set in any of them. He was looking for another city. Well, what kind of idea would have been in his mind? A perfect city. What are the timeless characteristics then of a city? And in answering that question, we shall begin to discover something of what heaven must be like. Let me say this first of all. Heaven is a place of special society. Abraham knew the city was the place of the populace. He had left tens and hundreds of thousands in Ur of Chaldees. He had left the populace. He had gone to be with the minority. He had gone to join himself with the pilgrims. He had gone to join himself with the people of God. He had left the crowds. A city is a community. A city is a place of habitation. When we speak of a city, we usually think of buildings. But there are no buildings if there is no people. And all the buildings are needed for the people. And so at the foundation and heart of a city is the people. A great populace. A great crowd. And they need the safety of the habitation of the city, and they all come together into the city. It's a community. And so we're not thinking of buildings when we think of heaven as a city. And we should never think about buildings. And we should never think about what's it like in regard to its material form. That's not the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is the community. That is the city. That's the heart of the matter. The people, the populace. And heaven is a place of special society and very large society at that. It's a city. It's the greatest city in the universe. He hath prepared for them a city. It's the community of the saints.
As far as for Father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all those pilgrims that we have read about, they are our family. They are the fathers of the faith, who we love, who we are related to in the covenant.
It is a community of a special people, a people that God is not ashamed of. He hath prepared for them a city. And so heaven is a greatly populated city. That's what it is. Its population is increasing by the day. As time progresses, there are the angels that are innumerable. There is the general assembly. There are the glorified spirits of the church. There are the spirits of men saved who are now made perfect. This innumerable and growing company. And yet heaven is not too small a place, because God knew how large he had to build it. Because he has the Lamb's Book of Life. And he knows how many is going to be in it. And he's prepared for them all according to his decree of election. He has prepared for them all a city. He knows it's just the right size for every one of the community of the saints. Every citizen is written down in the decree of God. This man was born there. And so God not only knew how many were coming, he has prepared for them that place to which they are coming. You see, man was never designed to be alone. He was created for association and fellowship. It is a place of blessed associations, heaven. And you think about the meeting place over there with your loved ones. This is comforting, is it not? Your loved ones are in the city. You're going to that community. You will meet them again. And so you will sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom. And what a delightful meeting it will be. Meeting with the prophets and meeting with the apostles and meeting with our fathers in the faith as the family of God. The blessed and large community of godly folk. That's what that is. And that's delightful to the child of God. Because he loves the community of the saints, the child of God. He loves his brethren and sisters. Hates the world, the ungodly company. He cannot abide. He must be patient with it when he has to endure it. But he loves the community of the saints. And so we are fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God. And the psalmist said, I am a companion of all them that fear thee. Not only in time, but in eternity. As much as the ungodly imagine that they want to go to heaven, they are wrong. They would not want to go to heaven. In heaven is the holy people. In heaven is the people who are talking about the Lord all the time. That's what heaven is. And there are some people who could not abide that. There are some people who could not abide holy talk. And people talking about the Lord all the time. Oh no, the worldly cannot abide that. They could not endure that. The ungodly cannot abide the fellowship of the saints. That's why it's so hard to get the ungodly into the house of God. They don't want it. They don't want the community of the saints. They don't want fellowship with kindred spirits. They wouldn't want really to go to heaven. They would abhor heaven with their unregenerate nature. They would. They couldn't settle there. It wouldn't feel like home there. The family conversation, they could not participate in there. It would be utterly strange to them, being unregenerate and unsanctified. This community, this city, they would feel most uncomfortable, as they feel even now, most uncomfortable for even an hour with the most humblest saint. And how would they do for all eternity? Amongst 10,000 times 10,000 people who are always, always talking about Jesus. How would they do then? It's prepared for them, the city. And so let me ask you tonight, do you love the community of the saints? Do you love the house of God? Do you love the fellowship of the people of God? Do you have enmity to someone who's always talking about the Lord? Or do you have delight if someone's always talking about the Lord? It's a mark of citizenship in your heart, given to you by regeneration. And so it's a place of special community, special society. He hath prepared for them a city. But it is also a place of sovereign statutes. You see, every city has its laws and governments. It has its authority and rule. And in the Bible, we read that most cities had a king. Every city had a king. We read of the king of Sodom, the king of Zoar, the king of Jericho, so on and so forth. They were cities and they had a king, and there was rule and there was government and there was order and there was authority, and rebellion was not tolerated. And criminals were dealt with. And sometimes they were executed. And then a mark of their rejection by the community, they were executed outside the gates of the city. The city is not a place of rebellion. The city is not for a people who will not be under authority. The city is not for a community who know no submission to the king. It is not. This community does not do as they please. This community does not walk as they think. This community is under statutes and under authority and under rule of the king and is in utter submission to the word. It is a place of order, and no sin is tolerated in this heavenly city, and naught that defileth ever enters in. There is the will of the sovereign, the Lord Jesus. And we sometimes pray that thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Completely done, fully done, utterly done in that city. No rebellion there, no sinners there, no disobedience there. It is a community of the spirits of just men made perfect. And that makes heaven a delightful place. That makes heaven a wonderful place. Because the believer there is with the king. And the struggle to perfectly do the will of God on earth has ended. The struggle has ended. The warfare has ceased. The resistance of the flesh is over, and there is perfection under the authority of Jesus. It is a wonderful place. Place where we are made perfect and fully made perfect and completely submissive to Jesus. It's a wonderful place for this reason. And on this score also, the ungodly would not like it. If they don't like the citizens of heaven, still less can they tolerate the King of Glory himself. They cannot tolerate his laws. They cannot tolerate his reign. They say by their life, daily, we will not have this King of Glory in our lives. We will not
as it were, be under his authority, and every day they say, let us break away the bonds of this king. Let us cut the cords of this king. Let us cast them away from us. We don't want to be under his authority. We don't want to be under his word. Cast it all away. That's not the mark of a Christian. Christian is a citizen of the King of glory and of that city. He's under the authority of the word. Yes, he does see resistance in his heart and life. And he has to warfare against the world, the flesh, and the devil. But he is not a rebel. He loves the King. And every day his prayer is, O Lord, that thou wilt set up thy perfect kingdom in my heart and bring every thought into captivity unto obedience unto thee. Every day he embraces his King of glory. Every day he hugs him with the embrace of faith. And he says, Lord Jesus, this day be my King, until at last I get into the heavenly gates and I won't have to pray that anymore. Thou wilt be my King in all the perfection of my holy soul. But the ungodly are not so. They are rebellious to his rule and reign. And they say Christians are too strict. And we would dread to have Christians in government because they would be too strict. Imagine being under a puritanical government. And do they not know that heaven is a puritanical government? And do they not know that the King of glory is himself the greatest of all Puritans? The Prince of Pilgrims himself, Jesus, crucified for his puritanical life. Christians are too strict. And in saying this, they show that they are not fitted for the city. How is it with you, my friend? Has the rule and government of this city already begun in your heart? Are the marks of submission to the word of God evident in your life? And then lastly, heaven is a place of sure safety. Permanence. One mark of a city in Bible times was its walls and gates that made it a city. And in times of trouble and insecurity and invasion in the land, all the people from the villages came up and they swelled the city with population as the gates were shut and the enemy kept out. It was a place of security, a place of safety. Abraham knew that. He knew that. When he left the security of the Ur of Chaldees and went out on his pilgrimage of faith as a tent dweller, he knew he would be exposed to many dangers. Sometimes his faith failed, and he sinned in trying to protect himself by deceit. Sometimes his faith failed. But he did realize he had not security in this earth. And we read of those in Hebrews 11. They made their homes in the dens and in the caves. They were cut asunder. They were naked and destitute and persecuted and maligned. Because, you see, they were tent dwellers. Here we have not the security of a city, but we seek one to come. A place of safety. And heaven is such a place. Heaven is a place that is safe and secure. It has foundations whose builder and maker is God. It is a place of safety, a city that cannot be shaken. You will notice that foundations is in plural, because this city has many foundations. That would be a sermon in itself. The foundation of God's eternal decree, the foundation of God's omnipotent power, the foundation of God's powerful plan,
the foundation of Christ's blood, the foundation of God's covenant with his people, the foundation of God's promise to his people in the Word, the foundation of grace and mercy in Jesus. What a foundation. And the Christian can never be robbed of his glory if he has Jesus. He'll be in heaven forever. The devil will never pluck him out of it. Sin will never ever again get into his heart to make him fall and stumble and apostatize. He'll never be robbed of his eternal glory. It's a city that is continuing. He's looking for it. It's a city that has walls and foundations. It's a city that has bulwarks. And that bulwark is salvation. The salvation that Jesus' blood has purchased. The redemptive work of Jesus Christ has established it as a safe and secure prepared city for his people. They shall be with him forever and ever. Its walls shall never be scaled. The devil will never break through the gates. The wicked will never enter into its doors. A temptation will never sneak its way into any of the cracks of glory, for there are no cracks in glory. Not even an accusation against them will enter in. Perfect security. Throughout the endless eons of time, a city. This is the imagery Abraham would have had in his mind. He never found this in Ur. Abraham knew he could find no such place on earth. Are we like our father Abraham? It says he looked for a city. That's a very practical thing, isn't it? What does that mean? He looked for it. Well, it means he had a firm conviction of the reality of it. That's for sure. It was more real to him than Ur of Chaldees that he just left behind. He didn't think anything of it. He's not looking for it anymore. The city was real then. Well, the people, the dismissal, you know, he didn't know anything about heaven, really. You know, he just was like the Jews, just looking for this wee bit of land in Palestine, as if that's it. That wasn't what Abraham was looking for. He knew God's promise was far more than that. He had a firm conviction of it. It was real to him. Is heaven real to you? Or is it just transient and shadowy and something that's distant and you hardly even contemplate it at all or think about it? Is it a reality? Has faith made the substance of it which is hoped for so real to you? Is it evident to your sensual perception by faith? He had a reality of it. Because you don't look for anything that's not real to you. He looked for a real thing. It also means that he desired to obtain a place there. That he did not want to miss a seat there. It also meant that he had a loose hold on the things of time and sense. He never got caught up in the world. He was tied very loosely to the things of time. That's what we should do as Christians. We should have a loose hold on the things of this world. They shouldn't really be very important, actually. Heaven is so real. So near. I think that's what it must mean in Abraham's life. It means preparation for that place as well. He was preparing himself for that place. He was getting to know the King of Glory. He made preparations for that place. Are we following in the steps of Abraham then? Looking for that city. You know, you're a citizen of heaven now, child of God. And you can partake of all of these benefits now. Benefits of community with the people of God, fellowship. We belong to a community of saints, and that should be manifested in our pilgrim life. Abraham did have a community that he dwelt with. He dwelt in tents with Isaac and Jacob, his sons. The fellow heirs with him of faith. That was all in his day. It was just his family at that day. But the church has grown much larger since then. As the stars that he was once shown would multiply to be like that, and now the Gentiles have been brought in, and we are dwellers with him in the same tents, with our children. The community of the saints. We should be enjoying this, but not forgetting it's only temporary here. And we're under the laws of heaven, as citizens of heaven. We're under the reign of Jesus, and we must manifest submission to his word. And then we have the safety of heaven. Yes, the world will malign us, and we will be attacked. And like Jeremiah, they'll take us and put us in the stocks. Yes, that'll happen. But they can't do anything more than the king allows. We have the protection of the king. He is our shield. Because we are citizens of heaven. Well, we might be in a far off land, foreigners in that land, but the king will send out his fleet for our defense if needs be so. He will send out his angels to be our ministers and our protectors if we need it. The ministering spirits who minister to us will also minister against our enemies because we are citizens of this city. And woe betide the man that touches the children of the king. It were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the sea. We are citizens of heaven. Let us pray.